Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. As always, well, first, I changed my Instagram handle, so it'll be easier to follow. So you can follow me on Twitter or on Instagram at Kojak Podcast. I didn't realize you could change your Instagram handle is too late. So it got to be uniform, got to make it easy, right? So go follow me there. If you want to support the show, I got a website, conspiracyorjustacoincidence.com. Also on Patreon, you can support me there, Conspiracy or JAC. And I got a new Patreon subscriber. Thank you so much for doing that. And if you guys do support the show and you like want a shout out or whatever, if you like, maybe you're trying to grow your social media following, not that I have thousands and thousands of followers, but I would be honored. It is the least I can do to put your handle or give you a shout out on the show. But I don't want to, you know, blow people's spots up if it's not what you want. So thank you, though, for supporting me there. It means so much. I've gotten so many nice reviews. Sorry, I'm just, you know, tweeting it. But it's so many nice reviews. It's just awesome. I'm like honored. I'm seriously honored that you guys would care to listen and you enjoy it and you learn something. That's the whole goal. This helps me learn because I love reading about history. And history is so important. We're going to go over this in this show, how important it is and how systematically we have been de-learning what happened to us. And why is that? Because the goal is that only a small portion of the population even remembers what happened in history, because then they can use the same tricks over and over again. You won't know the difference because you'll have never learned it. And we're going to get into some crazy statistics about that. News, Ukraine, Russia. I don't care. You know, I feel bad for people. I never want people in war. I couldn't imagine having to leave everything in my house. I feel horrible for the cats and the dogs and the kids. But I know it's a ploy, dude. It's just a ploy. That's what it is. They want to make you scared, and we'll see what happens, right? I think obviously they never let a good emergency go to waste. So I can only imagine this escalating. Also, I saw Jussi Smollett, our French friend who, you know, faked a hate crime. That's always nice. That's good. Helps the population when you fake hate crimes. You know, makes, as we see over and over again, how many fake hate crimes happen. But yeah, so he got released from prison on bond he's going to argue his case or something. It's just disgusting, right? I mean, that guy was willing to allow whoever to go to jail. If it was the first two white guys that were there, he was willing to send him to prison. I mean, that man is truly disgusting. And you all know that, but it's just infuriating. Like, could you imagine, dude, could you imagine if you were just walking down the street and you were walking around the same time as him, he ID'd you as the guys that did it, and you'd be sitting in jail. Do you think he would care? He would say, oh man, I just ruined these two people's lives. They lost their job. They're going to lose their house. No, he would have let them go to prison. Like, that is disgusting. Ah, Weez Plato, you're the first one here, and I'm glad you're listening while you work. Hopefully it's not too hard of a job, dude. But I'm glad I can provide some entertainment while you listen. But yeah, so today's episode, I always say this, but if you didn't listen to part one, I recommend go listen to part one. But it's this book called, oh my God, I almost forgot what book it was called, but it was called Rulers of Evil by Tupper Saucy. And if you don't have time to go back and listen, I understand. So my quick overview is we talked about the Knights Templar and which I love that topic so much, but the Templars, they picked up Gnostic belief set by being in the Middle East and talking to these, probably the Phoenicians. They picked up, which in the Phoenician religion, they had Baal and all this stuff like that. And they picked up this Kabbalistic knowledge, which is like gematria, numerology. So that's why whenever I see people that are big on this stuff, it's great. I don't understand it at all. And if you can help decipher what the elites are doing. I love that. That's awesome. But to base your life on this stuff, I would be cautious, is to say the least. Like, you open doors, you don't know where they lead. Dude, there is something out there that will reach back. But that's what these Templars believe. They get shut down, whether that was a ploy to give them cover or not. Regardless, they spread out. Jacques de Molay, the leader of the Templars, he said, all right, you guys split. We know we're getting ran through here. Take this stuff, spread it. Spread it out. So you went in Germany, Templars went there, and that's where you get the Teutonic Knights, where Hitler and the Nazis got a lot of their esoteric beliefs. The Rosicrucians also in Germany. Then in England and Scotland, you got Freemasons, Scottish Rite Freemasonry. And then in Spain and Portugal, you had what they called the Illuminati in like the 1500s. So this isn't the Illuminati from 1776, but this is, I guess, probably regardless, all of them shared these Gnostic, Kabbalistic beliefs that came from the Templars. And what I found interesting about the before we get in the next episode, the episode we're doing now, the Gnostics, what I found was crazy was like, so they believe this planet is the prison planet, right? That's this is the one that the bad God is controlling. And to escape this prison, you need to become enlightened, illuminated. That's why we get these terms and why their names are this. But so there's two groups. You either have these people that refuse to have sex. They were totally celibate because they believe if they brought another being into this planet, they are adding to the Archon's prison planet. And then you had the reverse, where it was like, since this was so evil, this planet, you need to do all evil to escape it. And so that's clearly, we can see where this belief set continues to this day with people that, you know what these politicians do, these disgusting, horrendous things that you could never imagine another human doing. Well, it's part of this belief system that these ancient Kabbalistic, Gnostic, secret society members that believed only the top deserve this knowledge. And that's where it comes from. So it comes from this. So anyway, we were talking about Loyola last episode, Ignatius of Loyola, who created the Jesuits. And I talked a little bit about him. His older brother sailed with Christopher Columbus, which is crazy, or maybe younger brother. Regardless, his brother sailed with Christopher Columbus, who of course sailed under the red cross on the white background, which is the Templar logo. Conspiracy or just a coincidence, we do not know. But probably, obviously, there was a reason for that, because Loyola was from Spain, like Christopher Columbus sailed for Spain. So anyway, he also would beat himself to death. He would whip himself with iron barbed things. Like, dude was a psycho. No rational, sane person in a time when like an infection could kill you, would this make sense? He also, Loyola, this great Jesuit man, of course, was in love with an 11-year-old girl while he was 27. Thank God his leg got blown off so he can never act on these feelings. But yeah, anyway, Pressy, what's up? I see a map picture. Is it a flat earth picture? I don't know. Or it looks like an earth, but I can't see it. But anyway, so Loyola, we continue his story. He returns from Barcelona, from Jerusalem. So he ends up going to Jerusalem by talking with the Pope. Spends 3 years studying Latin, since direct contact with the Bible at this time was banned. You know, the Catholic Church, you couldn't handle it, guys. Us regular folk, we couldn't handle the Bible, dude. It was too powerful. It could only remain in the hands of the top, the educated, not us, the experts, as they will. Opus, Matt, who's going to be on the show Friday, Great Deception Podcast. Matt, my man, he put Opus Dei-esque with the self-whippings. Dude, Opus Dei, and I know we're getting off track already, but that is, I never realized how big of an organization they are. And I talked about them in my, I don't even know when I talked about them. Oh, Operation Gladio. They came to play with helping funnel cocaine funds and things like that. But Loyola, he continued his bet. He got rid of all of his fancy clothes. He would just walk around begging people like a bum, and people would invite him over for dinner. Great situation. You never have to clean. You never have to cook. He would sleep on the floor, And he would actually give the good food to the poor people. He would only eat the bad food. I mean, this is what I mean. This guy isn't right in the head. He just can't be, dude. He would pray for 6 hours each day, attended Mass 3 times a week, confessed every Sunday. And though he did remove the iron, like, barbs from the whippings, he still continued. He liked the whipping. He felt it brought him closer to God. So he continued with that. He also did some secret penances. Also, he thought, you know what? I'm going to walk in barefoot in the winter, or I'm going to walk in barefoot in the summer, and then I'm going to poke holes in my shoes during the winter to get that real earth effect. I don't know if you guys know who Liver King is on Instagram, but this sounds like something he would do. And if you don't, if you do know Liver King, that's a funny joke. If you don't, just ignore it. But his followers, they would end up nutty, probably because he's mentally ill. He's attracting mentally ill people. And the Inquisition at the time even investigated him for preaching illuminated Gnosticism, but he was released on that. He said, all right, I'm going to dress normal. All right, I'll stop being so weird. He just wanted to not be bothered. So he went to Paris on a mule, and it was funny. He just missed John Calvin, the, you know, big religious Protestant figure who I know nothing about, so I'm not even going to try, but he was leaving Paris as Loyola was coming in. So it's just weird, almost crossing paths. But the University of Paris, where Loyola went to study, was for wayward Parisian boys. Now, I just mentioned how he was in love with an 11-year-old girl. He went to this school when he was 37. I'm sure no one knows the answer, but this sounds like, and from our MK Ultra episodes, young children that have had traumatic events are always the ones that the MK Ultra brainwashing would go for. So Loyola, who's about to run a cult, you know, happenstance, I'm sure, and finds his way at a school for wayward Parisians that are probably beaten, abused, hungry, and looking for a father figure, which I'm sure Loyola was more than perfect to stand in their place. He was broke after a follower stole all of his cash. But Loyola didn't need a job, right? He had people giving money, but he did need to raise an army, and that you need cash. So he travels to Belgium to get that cash. And I also found it funny, Belgium was the first country that instituted a Federal Reserve Bank in like 1717, somewhere around there. And I just thought that was weird. But regardless, he's armed with all this Kabbalistic knowledge, cash, and info provided by the emperor, the Holy Roman Emperor. So he goes back to England. He forms another group there. They all want to he talks about this high time, like acting like the Templars. Let's go and get back Jerusalem, which I would agree with if it wasn't under Loyola. But he has like a ragtag group of fellows. And one by one, the disciples start calling themselves the Company of Jesus. Within a year, they vowed to undertake without question whatever task the Pope required of them. Always, you know, not great when you will do whatever without asking questions, but nonetheless, they did. So Clement VII died, Jerusalem was overtaken, and Luther Bible was creating record defection numbers in Germany, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, France, and then England, King Henry VIII, so at this time, he was still prosecuting any Bible readers like the Pope, but if we know anything about Henry VIII, the dude wants a son, man, and none of these girls are giving him a boy. So he says, Pope, give me a divorce. I want to also marry this Protestant-oriented Anne Boleyn. And the Pope said nothing. He didn't give him an answer, which might be even worse than a yes or a no when people don't give you an answer. And so he said, all of England's gone, Rome. This is mine. And that's when he started, obviously, the Church of England. And I was just at an Episcopal church for my nephew's baptism. Beautiful church. It was in New Jersey, but they're like a woke church. I would never go there. I would never get baptized there. They made you wear masks in the church. Like there is no mask mandate in New Jersey, but you had to wear a mask in this church. Need I say more? It was, but regardless, Clement was succeeded by this guy, Cardinal Farnese. Now, we kept talking last episode about the Medici family and how powerful they were and how much of a role they played in the popes, in Italy, in the Roman Empire. I mean, this family was so powerful. every pope was like out of their family. And so regardless, this next cardinal that's being groomed to take the place of Clement, he was educated privately in Lorenzo de' Medici's library, which was some like researchers call the Western epitome of civilization and knowledge. I mean, think of the books the wealthiest family in the 1500s had. Knowledge that has been far lost to time, truth that we will never get a hold of again. And also, I can only imagine how many like Kabbalistic and Gnostic belief books that existed in this library of his. So clearly this guy is also educated in this weird belief. Also, Cardinal Farnese's sister was having sexual relations with Pope Alexander. He even had a naked statue of her made and was put in Paul III's tomb in St. Peter. 2 centuries later, they covered up her boobies because, you know, you can't be having that. Come on. Come on. You can't be doing that. But Paul III is a major figure in the history of the Jesuits and it was of the end of the U.S. since it was he who proved Loyola in 1539 to do battle in the Lord's God's service under the banner of the cross. And so Loyola said to the Pope, listen, dude, I'm going to raise an army, no more than 60 people. We're going to have a party. I'm not inviting more than 60 people. Well, he would end up getting way more than 60, but Loyola had 60 people that took this crazy oath with a bloody knife on their chest with the Pope, Loyola, and like another top Jesuit boss. They would, that's their pledge they would take. You know, seems a little unchristian to have your own blood put it on your heart, swearing fealty and loyalty to a man, but rules don't matter to so many people. So also, which was in this like constitution, how we'll get to how it came out, but the Jesuits, they would wear no particular outfit. They're in their bylaws, constitution, whatever you want to call it. They would dress in accordance with the environment they found themselves. So that would be great if you wanted to infiltrate anything. They could be doctors, lawyers, authors, merchants, scholars, whatever the world might demand, they could just come in and fill. And they would fill that role gladly and report whatever information they would manipulate in the way they're supposed to or whatever beliefs they probably have because they're in this secret society group. And chameleons, absolutely, dude. Their head would be superior general who would hold the place of the Lord. Again, I know so little about Christianity. I call myself a Christian, but I could assure you, I'm pretty certain the Bible does not say identify man to put in place of God and worship him. But nonetheless, the Jesuits believe that. So this superior general would share the power with the Pope, but not be known by the public. And he also got the title of Vicar of Christ. So he's as powerful as the Pope, but invisible, which we're going to see is why that is very beneficial. Papa Nero, or the Black Pope is what he's called. His followers must have instant obedience, all critical thought suppressed. You know, this is like the first rule of cults, by the way. I feel like the CIA took this advice and just repurposed it. The one quote in their constitution says, what seems to me as white, I will believe black of the if the hierarchical church defines so. You know, that's a little nerve scary. But okay. And then also when elevated to command, that promise I told you about, the bloody knife, the three people in the room, there is a sign that the one guy carries that says, it is just to annihilate impious rulers. What is an impious ruler? Well, I guess whatever they deem is an impious ruler. So it is just to annihilate them. Also, they would hold a black small crucifix. And I told you about the dagger. With a bunch more promises. So this also sounds like the Freemason initiation where you have like a noose around your neck and you swear like your tongue will be ripped out, like these horrible things. What's the point of making these huge promises if you're just being a regular person who's trying to do good in the world? Like what? You would never have to do that. But that's why it's weird. It makes zero sense. It can't be a good thing that these people are doing this stuff. So the spirit of Trent, see, I learned so much. I'm so bad in Protestant and Catholic knowledge and stuff like that. But the Protestant term was coined in 1529 Charles Habsburg's Germany was having this good old Mexican standoff between the Protestants and the Catholics, and they stayed nonviolent for 15 years, but they did not like each other. So they had this big meeting, the Council of Trent, and basically at the end of it, it was like a long 9 years. So you had no idea, you know, that's a long time to have a debate, for God's sake. But it ended with whoever controls the region, that is the religion. So to avoid violence, so Protestants probably thought, okay, great, we can read the Bible because our prince or our governor or whatever, they're a Protestant. So this is going to work out great. Well, just like democracy, just like everything we experience, if you have a person who's swayable, who maybe isn't, you know, power has gone to their head, they want more power, they want more wealth, well, that's not a good system to have. So the Jesuits knew this was a win. And what did they do? They bribed a few of the princes of the region, and it went all Catholic. So the Protestants lost that one. And that's why we talk about the history, why it's important to know history, because they use the same like tricks. Like, you know, they'll give you a win. Like, for example, workers' insurance or health insurance. They gave the health insurance to the people because the protesters were literally killing and people were dying of revolts that were at unbad working conditions. So did they improve the working conditions? No, they just gave them insurance and they say, look at this great win. Now, when our horrible working conditions get you sick, we'll take care of you and pay for your health cost. So it was at Trent though. The Council of Trent also hurled 125 internal damnations against Protestantism. And it was at Trent that the Catholic Church began marching to the Jesuit drum and the Black Papacy. So this, again, I said was 1545. So this is when the Jesuits are really starting to get kicking. A generation later, 1584, Pope Greg XIII bestowed the Jesuits the right to deal in commerce and banking. And Pope Gregorio said every pope should have a Jesuit on his staff. They must have been so good with money, guys. Wow, that must be amazing. And this was also during the Roman Inquisition, not to be confused with the Spanish Inquisition, where they reported directly to the Spanish king. But Protestants were being chased, right? They went underground in much of Europe, joining secret groups like Rosicrucians, Teutonic Knights, Freemasonry. And the thing is, with secret societies, this was exactly the Jesuit goal. So now you got these regular people who just want to read the Bible and kind of live in peace. They're joining secret societies because there's protection in secret societies. But in Freemasonry, you never know who the leader is. When you're in these rooms, you know somebody who has a higher title, but you do not know who the king of the Freemasons is. So same with all of these secret society groups. So as I told you earlier, the Templars split up and started these secret societies. So they're being ran by the Gnostic Kabbalistic king himself, Loyola. So all these people are just doing things right, and he's just getting information on all of them. Just, you know, crazy, dude. Like, geez, these people just want to be left alone, and these elite people are so paranoid and brilliant that they're able to manipulate situations. A century after Trent, Sebastiano Ricci this was so crazy. Holy shit. This was so crazy. So this artist, Sebastiano Ricci, commemorated the meeting with famous art. I'm going to try and pull it up while I'm talking. It was called Council of Trent Artwork. Let's see if we can find it real quick. If not, I'll look up his name. But this was so wild. All right, I think this is, let's see. I don't know if this is it. I should have looked it up. I think this is, it's not even worth it. Anyway, regardless, this famous artwork he drew, Sebastiano Ricci, and it's at the Council of Trent, and it was after the Council of Trent, obviously. But above the Pope's head hovers a deity. You would think Jesus, right? Jesus is watching the Council of Trent. No. It is not Jesus. It's not Mary. It's not God. It is Mercury of the Sibylline and Virgilian Gospels. And last episode we talked about that. That was like the holy scripture of the ancient Roman Empire and of Caesar. Basically told you, die for Rome. die for the glory of Rome. That is your duty as a human. And that's where we got all these figures from in art and phrases that are on our dollar bill and things like that. They're from these two books that they brought to America. I'm sure they have nothing to do with the other. They just like the saying. They like that Latin. But regardless, Mercury was the deity that hovered above the Pope's head. Mercury is the god of commerce. What do we just learn? The Jesuits just got able to act in banking and commerce. The metal is named for him because it can produce refined gold, which commercial value is derived from. Commerce, right? Liquid at room temperature. Mercury, everyone, you guys know what mercury is. Silver, like wiggle liquid. And so what you do is you use it to pull out the impurities of gold ore. When heated, it'll wash away the impurities, giving doubt to pure gold. Blah, blah, blah. Science, science, science. Mercury, you get real gold. So we can see the esoteric, cultish, why that's important. And Mercury, this was all stuff that I didn't know. So Mercury, he's above the Pope's head. His theological life began in ancient Babylon, known as Marduk. The Bible calls him Merodach. Hebrews call him Enoch. Egyptians call him Thoth. Scandinavians worshipped him as Odin. Teutons were as Wotan, and Orientals as Buddha. So Mercury is this clearly an important figure in all of these ancient religions, pagan religions. And one could make this connection of probably if you are a Gnostic, Mercury is probably your go-to guy. He's the god of knowledge, of commerce, of all this stuff. And Roman, in 495 BC, a Roman version of, it was a Roman, Mercury was the Greek Hermes. So Mercury is considered god of the universal mind, of writing, number, thought, gematria. Just as Mercury burns the impure metal in gold, he is the deity that uses intellectual brilliance to Pied Piper impure humanity. It gets even crazier. So Mercury would be the guy that would attract people, lead their souls to Hades. Hades is not a hot vacation spot. Though it is hot, you know, it's not a place people want to go. It's our, you know, right. We can understand this. But he would use his charm, deceit, and whatever other means to get people to follow him. And just like the metallic form of Mercury, the god Mercury could change his shape and appearance instantly. So I immediately think Terminator 2, you know, the guy that he's the next Terminator that's better than the Arnold Terminator. And that's his exact character. He's Mercury. He can change into whatever he looks like. And this is why Mercury earned the title of the trickster, patron deity of the deceivers and thieves. Mercury even liked to steal Apollo's damn cows. Why that was important. And I guess, you know, cows were important. So the point is to mark the Council of Trent, to represent it, this historic moment of Christian faith, you use the god of deceit, a pagan god, to represent it above the Pope's head. Why? Unless this is a saying something, right? This by chance, this is just a, oh, he just liked the god or what? That makes zero sense. So the Jesuits are Mercury. They are impure to humanity. They are trying to attract them to oblivion, leaving behind only the pure, which would be the Gnostic, Kabbalistic worshiping evil people. I just thought that was insane. But so after Trent, the Jesuits now are truly big time. They are balling, if you will. They are wicked smart. And people always want to go confess to the Jesuits. And the quote was, they put cushions under your knees and elbows too. I just thought that was like cute, kind of, you know, like people wearing those crazy outfits being like, you got to go, dude, you're confessing to the Catholic guy? You got to go to the Jesuit guy. He is so much easier. But for two centuries, and we're going to see why that was the case. For two centuries, every single French king from Henry III to Louis XV would confess to Jesuits. All German Holy Roman emperors after the early 17th century confessed to Jesuits. Dukes of Bavaria, rulers of Poland, Portugal, Spanish kings, James II of England. So why is that good? Why is that good for a Jesuit group for a new secret society to have all powerful kings. So I'm sure all their powerful friends would also confess to the same guy, or at least another Jesuit. Well, you're giving them unfettered access to information that they're not telling anybody else. They're banging their sister. I don't know. Whatever they're doing, they're wearing a dress and playing around. They're telling this, they're confessing this to this Jesuit priest. I'm sure they're not going to use that against you. And a group that says they will annihilate all impious rulers, yeah, I'm sure they're just forgetting what the kings are telling them. Also, why this good? Because you now know who's a Jesuit. So now you're, let's say you're a politician. You join the Jesuits loosely. You have access to your political opponents, everything they do, every dirty thing, every dirt you could imagine. This is only going to be used for blackmail, for whatever you want. I mean, information is power. For example, a Jesuit confessor to the King of France, after many confessions, essentially said, listen, buddy, you're not going to heaven, King. All right, King Louis, whoever, whichever king you are, you, unless you knock out all the Protestant heretics out of France, you are having sex with too many people that aren't your wife. You're drinking too much. This is the only thing that's going to save you. You'll spend eternity in hell if you do not kick all the Protestants, heretics out of France. And the king smashed every Protestant church to the ground, closed schools, took kids from parents, did whatever if you were a Protestant. And this set the example of having Jesuit-run schools. And wouldn't you know, Jesuit colleges, they sprang up like wildfire, and they still exist today. And all of which were free, all of them, in a time when this was not a normal thing. They were free schools. So what's the saying that we always say about Facebook or porn or whatever? If the product is free, you're the product. So you're going to these free schools. Is it because they teach the best stuff and all that? No, it's because they are training the next generation of people who will, they'll identify people with good aptitude, people who are intelligent, people who they can manipulate. And this is like a farm system of baseball, right? By 1556, three-fourths of membership were dedicated to 46 Jesuit colleges. By 1749, 669 colleges, 176 seminaries, 24 universities. I mean, they were everywhere in Europe. The curriculum of Jesuit colleges, see, this is so powerful, right? So these Jesuit colleges, they're free, they're popping up, they're becoming the gold standard. So what they teach is going to be taught everywhere. And all of these other schools started following Jesuit suit. And they created the curriculum for all of these universities in this time period. Founding fathers of our country went to Jesuit schools. There was a big push. Oh, this was crazy. I know I always say that, like, and I don't know if it makes you like listen more, but I always worry I'm being boring. And so when I know I'm coming up with like a awesome top, like an awesome fact, I have to give you a shout, I give you a heads up so you're ready for it. But so in these Jesuit colleges, entertainment and dramatic production was started being pushed. Huh. Okay. And hang with me. The first Jesuit theater was performed in Vienna, 1555, 40 years before Shakespeare. Between 1597 and 1773, more than 500 Jesuit theatricals were staged in the Lower Rhine regions alone. Oh, I'm sure. And what were those plays about, do you guys think? Do you think they were about how you be a good person, how usury is, you should be killed if you are committing usury and debt slavery? Do you think that's what they taught? Do you think they taught, you know, respect your parents, be kind to your neighbor? No, no, no. They were political entertainment, mocking Martin Luther. After one Jesuit play in 1609, all 14 members of this Bavarian court, all the power players of the region, after they play, they left the play to go do the spiritual exercises of Loyola, which were like the whippings and stuff like that, but more just prayer and meditation without the whippings. And the one Jesuit priest quote was, 100 sermons could not have been more effective. Do you guys see how important that is? I'm sure you do. Like, it is so important that entertainment, even in the 1500s, was being used to manipulate people into whatever viewpoint they want. because they realized we are stupid. People talking like me, look how many people listen, you know, whatever. I'm not saying that to like say like, oh, I need more listeners. I'm saying that because that's why our community is so small. That's why so few of us read, because it's so much easier to just shut off your brain and watch the TV and watch some shit TV show. And before you know it, you don't even know what you believe, because you've watched, I mean, like, think of all of us. We grew up on Disney Channel, or at least I did, and Nickelodeon. And though the propaganda wasn't as strong then, it was still strong. It was still strong. And then think of what the kids are being propagandized now. Why do they do that? Because it was effective in the 1500s. It's going to be effective now. It's just insane, dude. And they figured this out right away. The faculty of the Munich College praised the Jesuit theater and his ability to captivate school-age youngsters. Shocking. Kids like entertainment. Oh, no freaking way. This is the quote. There is no better means of making friends out of the heretics and the enemies of the church and filling up enrollment of the school than good-spirited play acting. Mozart, at 11, was commissioned to write music at a Jesuit college in Salzburg, where his father was the musical director. Oh, and it gets even crazier here. I'm getting excited. Woo, my blood is pumping. My heart is pumping here. In England, the Jesuit theater was not known, right? The England, they said, F you, Catholic Church. We don't want no Jesuits. The Queen Elizabeth hated the Jesuit. It was a crime to be around a Jesuit. And, you know, it didn't help that they could just hide and they didn't wear garb, so you didn't know who was who. So it was a great way to be spies. But if a goal of the Jesuit theater was to take the attention that might have been spent reading the Bible, then England produced the greatest Jesuit playwright of them all, Shakespeare. So, right, like, I'm sure you understand this, but like, even if your propaganda isn't getting through, the Jesuits aren't able to host these plays, they're not able to propagandize with their Jesuit theater, well, the idea of plays spread like wildfire. If there's money to be made, you better believe that there's people willing to do it. So they're still going to run plays. So the time that maybe these people would be spending with their family, reading the Bible, studying the Bible, they're now spending it on pointless entertainment. What is that? That's exactly what we have today. At some point, it doesn't really matter what propaganda they're putting on the TV. It'll get to you. Your social media, TikTok, whatever. It'll get to you. But that time that you could be spending hanging with your family, building ties with your community, reading history, reading nonfiction books, you're spending dicking around playing Madden NFL 2020, even though you played the past 10 years and it's the same game. Shakespeare's character, and so England, though, no Jesuits, they created Shakespeare. Carl, what's up? America, where are you now? You know, we should just end the show on that, Carl. God damn. Where are we now? Anyway, Shakespeare characters do preach in Shakespeare, not the Bible, of course. They preach Gnostic illumination of Medici learning, Jesuit school stuff, which isn't surprising, even though Jesuits are banned from England, since Shakespeare, who was probably Francis Bacon, was a Rosicrucian seeped in Medici learning. Rosicrucians, as we talked about. Stephen says Gen Xer here. What up, brother? I'm a millennial, though. But I was born in 90. I guess Gen X is what, like 1980? So you've had even a better growing up. I played the original Nintendo because my older brother, who is your age probably, but you had it best. You had some technology. I've imagined Gen Xers like Friends, right? The show Friends. Like, you know, you missed the call? Well, you got to go to their door or wait till they call you back. Now, Jesus, you could call me whenever, and you have to answer. But yeah, so Shakespeare, you know, there's all this lore. This one guy could not have, you know, probably didn't write all this stuff. I forget their, like, the statistic, but he would have had to have written something like 40 pages a day or something like that to do all of these plays. And we see, unless, you know, like that, it sounds like me propaganda. And just like how our movies are seeped in symbolism, meaning underneath meaning underneath meaning, so was Shakespeare. Macbeth was a condemnation of Jesuits and their satanic worship, murderers, witches. That was well understood by the contemporaries of the time. Macbeth loosely symbolizes the gunpowder plot. Guy Fawkes, you know, V for Vendetta, who was a Jesuit, of course he was. Guy Fawkes was a Jesuit to blow up Parliament. So why is it this good for Rome and the papacy? Why is this good? Well, King James used it to say, look at these extremists. Look at these crazy people that exist in Catholic Europe. You don't want them there. They're crazy. Yes, we have Catholics in England, but they're moderates. They're normal. They're okay. We're going to allow them here. So you're securing the England for loyal Roman Catholics. So theatrics, psyops, all terms that the public would realize today, they were brand new to our ancestors. Pope Gregory the 15th, first Jesuit to become Pope, which I thought was interesting. I know our current Pope, he was a Jesuit as well, who was also tried for war crimes in the dirty war in Argentina when thousands and thousands of children went missing, when families, towns were literally thrown out of airplanes. He pardoned the priests that were responsible to a lot of the murders. You know, well, it's his buddies. He's got to step up for him. Can't just let him take all the heat. So the first Jesuit Pope canonized Loyola. Canonization, by the way, that's like, I don't know, I guess they make you a saint. I'm not Catholic, but it's nowhere in the Bible. Rather, it's where it is, though, canonization, where that comes from. It actually comes from a pagan tradition, so that's good, called apotheosis. You know, tomato, tomato, whatever. Jesuit priest Anathias Kircher contributed to Jesuit theater with his invention of the microphone and he was born 1602 to 1680. So this Jesuit priest who created the microphone, he was also the father of camera theory with his magic lantern. So basically he was able to create like a lens that would, it was like the green screen of the time. It could show like a town burning that wasn't really burning. And obviously Thomas Edison, who's the father of movies, his studio is West Orange, New Jersey, where all of his prototypical films were made, called Black Maria. Where he filmed it, like the state studio was called the Black Maria. So if you listen to last episode, one, the Jesuits hold a black cross in their promise ceremony. Two, Loyola, before he like decided he was going to do this to create the Jesuits or whatever, he prayed to the Black Madonna. And then he also, and that was who he worshipped, this Black Madonna statue. Then he was talking to Mary, and she told him to do this stuff, supposedly. But then he also, when he was traveling to Jerusalem, he rode on the Nigra or something like that, and it was the name of the ship. So could be just be a funny story. It's just coincidence, but odd, right? Cowboys, Jesuit invention. And I love the Wild Wild West, man. Like, the only video game I've ever played, Red Dead Redemption 2, it was addicting. And let me tell you, I finished it. I'm horrible at video games, but it was more just like the story. But that must have been so amazing to be alive in that time. So Eusebio Kino, his statue is outside the Capitol building. Why? Who knows? He's a Jesuit professor in Bavaria. And in the 1690s, he introduced cattle farming to southern Arizona. He was literally the father of the cattle business. Kino's cowboys, projected through Kircher's magic lantern, indoctrinated America in Jesuit theater and Roman Catholicism theology. And that was a lot big sentence, but it was kind of saying like it started with this, the Jesuit priest who made the microphone and the camera, and cowboys films were like how America started the film industry of Hollywood. It was built on this. So it was two Jesuits that created the storyline that created Hollywood, essentially. Does that make sense? Obeying scripture isn't needed in comprehending good versus evil. That's what they taught in these movies. Like, there's right and wrong. You know what's right or wrong. You don't need the Bible to tell you what's right or wrong. If it feels right, it's right. If it feels wrong, it's wrong. What does that sound like to me? Luciferianism, do what thou wilt. It all comes back to this same belief that there is an evil religion or an opposing religion to Christianity. And that's what all of our people practice. That's what they'd worship. And what have we seen I skipped two things. Catholic Action. I talked about them in my Gladio episode. They were like a propaganda created group to talk about communism and promote globalism. And it was started in 1922 by two Jesuit priests trying to bring Europe under a unified Catholic Church. What does that sound like to you? One world religion, one world government. Like it or hate it, we'll put you in a jail for being a dissident, and you'll never get out. So that's always nice. Black Pope Vladimir Lidachowski worked with Mustache Man of the 1930s. We know which Mustache Man, the Mustache Man that everyone knows and calls people that name. The Jesuits worked with him. His book that I don't want to say, it says it starts with an M and then it's a K. I'm sure you can figure this out, by Mustache Man. Well, who wrote that book that got him so famous? Oh, that's right. It was written by a Jesuit priest, Father Stamfel. And what we have seen in cinema since the 60s, morally repugnant, repulsive detail of violence, corruption, degeneracy, which gradually, we talked about this gradualism before, it opens your mind to accepting this filth. What have we seen? I remember my dad, he'll always tell this story. He saw Psycho when he was, you know, like 18 or something, or maybe I'm making him older than he is now, I don't know. But he said that was earth shattering to watch that murder scene in the shower where you don't even see anything. I think it's just like, and that was earth shattering. What do we have on now? My God, dude, like every show has filth and sex in it and all that. Like, is this needed? I mean, how many of you guys are sitting there even now? You're maybe with some family, you're watching a movie, and out of nowhere, the main character's banging somebody. Is this needed? Can you just infer this maybe? Like, they shut the door and the bedroom's closed. Why do I need to see this for 30 seconds? What does this relate to the plot? Like, that's why I know there's a greater trend or a greater goal of doing this, because some of these things that happen in movies, they're not needed at all. Game of Thrones, for example. All of this, did Tolkien in Lord of the Rings need to write in sex scenes to make his work enjoyable and able to watch? No, he didn't. So why do they do this? Because it's this gradualistic, overarching plan to bring you away from God and further away. That you accept it. You say, okay, this is normal. I've seen this on TV. Death. Violence. Well, I've seen this on TV. So if you see it in person, it's less, you know, like pearl clutching. You're immune to it. You've seen it. It doesn't matter. It also promotes Gnostic themes and symbolism. As we all know, it's the Medici library on steroids. That's what the entertainment industry is. And the Jesuits started it. And I talk about this all the time. History helps us. Oh, this was the crazy statistic. Carl says, we will eventually see real murder and rape and violence soon. Gradualism is taking us there. Dude, I totally agree. I'm waiting for pedophilia. Like, it's going to come where there's, and they've already made movies. Like, I don't watch any, but I saw the one, it was like an indie movie with a weird name. Maybe someone in the chat knows. But regardless, I think it's about like a pedophile. Like the guy's, she's older or whatever. And think also, last thing before I get off, because this next statistic's even crazier than the other ones, but I see all the time cannibalism too. Yeah, Carl. I see all the time though, like kids' stories of a young man in school being raped by his female teacher. And you look at the comments, they'll never use the word rape in the article. They'll say he had sex or whatever. And the comments are, ooh, didn't have that teacher when I was there. Wish I had that problem. Oh, she's hot. She doesn't need to be. Wow, how lucky for him. Dude, that's disgusting. That's literally disgusting. I don't care if it's a boy. I don't care if it's a girl. It's not effing healthy. But yet, this is encouraged due to porn, due to degeneracy. We encourage this stuff. Like the stepsister thing and stepmom thing and all this stuff. Do you think that's a normal thought to have? Somebody that's in your family, like That is being propagandized into all these young kids' brains. That is terrifying. Why? Is it because they ran out of good ideas? They ran out of just regular porn that they could do? No, because gradualism will keep taking you another step further. When you thought you hit the edge, oh, they can't go any crazier than that. Oh, believe me, they will. They will. And they're going to continue. So moral of the story, don't watch movies. Don't watch porn. All right. Now let's get back to the show. So history helps us understand what we're talking about. We all like history here. That's why we're listening to Kojak, while you're listening to me ramble on for hours at a time. But do you think our general public knows history? No, they suck. They couldn't tell you what happened in World War I. They couldn't tell you when the Civil War happened. They will have zero clue. And I'm not even a history pro. I'm like getting there. After 3 years of reading, I've learned so much, but there's still so much to learn. There are people that know way more than me. And that's what we should be trying to strive for, learning more, talking to people, listening to people that know this stuff. But regardless, our public is not interested in that. They would much rather be told what to do, what to think. Watch this ball be thrown better than anybody else can throw a goddamn ball. Watch these adults exercise. Great. I love it. I love it. Instead of finding out more about the 7-year war, let's look into watching LeBron James put a ball through a hoop. Crazy. So anyway, why am I bringing up this history thing? Well, I told you, Jesuits had free colleges. They were the first to do this. Curriculum was based off the Jesuit curriculum because they were so popular. They created theater, blah, blah, blah. In 1914 in America, all institutions require courses in English composition. By 1964, 86% required it. By 96, 36% required English composition. 1914 for math, 82% of colleges and universities required it. By 64, 36. By 96, 12%. Natural sciences went down to 34% by 96. Literature, not one of the top rated 50 colleges in 1996 had a mandated course in literature. Not one. Not one. Yeah, I bet they have a mandated course in diversity training, though, or inclusivity. I'm sure they have that. History, 1914, 90% had it. 64, 50%. By 1996, only one of the top-ranked 50 schools required a history class. That is disgusting. The day is coming when only you guys and myself will know anything that's not on TV or TikTok or Facebook. Historians, and I'm doing the bunny ear quotes, historians will be the only ones, and us self-taught, self-learning people will know any history. That day is quickly approaching, quickly approaching. And school is a joke. I went to school, and to be super scary with everyone, I was in my last semester to be a nurse while I was using heroin. I didn't study at all. At all. I passed all my, I got A's and B's the whole time. Like, that should terrify us. Education, it's a joke. I learned more in these past 3 years than I have my whole life. And I'm sure you guys have too. It is a joke. You don't need, if you have a brain, you can get a degree. Carl says he's a 10th grade dropout, but look how smart you are, Carl. School is pointless, is what the point is. And it's only getting dumber. It is dumbing down our society on purpose. I do my best to like pick the chapters that I find interesting for you guys that are important. Basically though, like Jesuit is defined in the dictionary with words that essentially mean to trick. So that's literally their definition. This was crazy too. Just gives you a great example of what this group is. Sorry, I'm super thirsty. If you guys follow me on Twitter, I've been eating tons of protein. I'm literally hitting like 225 grams of protein a day, and I'm so thirsty all the time. Okay. So these Jesuit priests, I said the word in the dictionary, like they use synonymous with to trick. Mercury, the tricking god, painted over the Council of Trent. Wonder why that is. But so our fake elite leaders of the day, they write books all the time and they like tell you what they're going to do, but no one reads it. That's why they do it. It's like that. They have to disclose it to you. And because we're all, you know, go my team, they no one knows. But the Jesuits are the same exact way. So Father Busenbaum, a Jesuit priest, he was asked about the obligation of eating fish on Fridays. He goes, "On Fridays, every good Catholic must eat creatures that live in the water, which is why I order a nice roast duck." He was a professor at a Jesuit college. That's good. So he's not even following his own made-up rules. He also taught moral theory at the school. He taught how a criminal could escape charges of a B&E. B&E, for any of you non-gangster folks, is breaking and entering. But this was like a question he taught. "Did you force the window to gain felonious entry into these premises?" the judge would ask. "Certainly not." And in his head, I entered through the skylight. Someone might say, "Oh, he was joking. It's a joke. He's a funny, witty professor." And okay. Well, there is another Jesuit, Father Gurry, taught at Roman College in 1875. He taught how a wife could commit adultery, but not technically be lying to her husband. "I have not committed any crime." And then in her head, she would say, "In such a manner that I should reveal." This is the opinion of Saint Liguori. Who's Saint Liguori? Oh, Saint Liguori, just the patron saint of confessors and moralists. That is his idea. Saint Liguori, a canonized whatever, was telling how to, he was the patron saint of confessing and moralists, had the opinion that you can lie and commit these crimes if you share kind of not whole truths, you share half truths. Like, it's the inmates are running the asylum, right? Like, these are the people that we're supposed to be getting our morals and how to act correctly and get into the kingdom of heaven. And this is what they're telling their followers to do. That's why they didn't want them reading the Bible. How much of our modern day politicians talk in this exact dissimilar, deceitful manner? They call themselves Christians while they have out of wedlock relations. Why they commit adultery? Why they are pedophiles? You say why they commit usury, bribery, blackmail, all these things. But yet, oh, I'm a good Christian conservative. Now let's go to war in this poor country where they're not selling Standard Oil all of their natural resources. Also, Father Gurry would teach that adultery in the Bible can also mean idolatry, like in the Old Testament. So an adulteress can deny her guilt by declaring that she has not committed adultery because, well, adultery in the Bible means idolatry. And that's, you know, so I was just banging the neighbor. I was not worshiping the neighbor. So no, husband that I love, wife that I love, I did not commit adultery. These are the religious leaders. And obviously we could you'd say, well, you're cherry picking. I just gave three examples of powerful, a saint, educators, professors, and this is what they taught. And this is called casuistry, by the way, that's the word. It's applying moral principles falsely and deciding the rights and wrongs of a case. And casuistry is used in many ways by these Jesuit priests. Remember I said they were involved in commerce and banking? Well, that's usury. So how do you get around something that's blatantly talked about in the Bible that you should not do? Jesus says, lend, hoping for nothing in gain and your reward will be great. So how do Jesuit priests get around that? Well, they use casuistry. The same way they said you could cheat on your wife, you're not really adultering because you're not worshiping them. They said that, this was again, Father Gurry, this is how you get around that morally. If lending 100 francs, you are losing 10 francs by loaning it, you lend really 110 francs, and then you shall receive 110 francs. Basically, so you lend 100 francs plus the 10 to pay back the 10 that you're losing if you loan 100. Does that math make sense? I actually didn't understand it when I wrote it, and now I understand it. So yeah. So then that's how he justifies, if I loan 100, I get 110 back. Casuistry. It's basically manipulation, also cause a treaty that allowed the Templars before the Jesuits to do international banking as well. They used this same manipulation of morality, and casuistry at its core is deceit and trickery. Now, who is the god of deceit and trickery? Oh, right, Mercury. And boom, we've come full circle to Sebastiano's painting of the Council of Trent with Mercury hanging out there above the Pope's head. But okay, in the Jesuits' defense, all is fair in love and war. And if you deem human life in a constant battle of war, well, the law sleeps, right? So before the American Revolution, Roman Catholics could not hold public. And now we're getting to America. This is crazy. So I thought that was pretty crazy. This is even crazier. But Roman Catholic, I gotta take a drink first. My God, my throat. I'm not gonna be able to talk tomorrow. So before the American Revolution, Roman Catholics in America couldn't vote, couldn't hold public office, nothing in the colonies. In Pennsylvania and Delaware, they were persecuted by the Huguenots, which were Catholics that were chased out of France, which is ironic because the Huguenots left France to practice freely, and now they're chasing out Catholics. They're doing the same thing that their oppressors did to them. Humans were just like stupid, dude. I don't know. Or on the flip side, why didn't these Catholics go somewhere else or stay in France? But anyway, Roman Catholics' allegiance was to Pontifex Maximus. And if you guys didn't listen to the last episode, that Pontifex Maximus started with Caesar. It was God's chosen person that you die for the Pontifex Maximus. When Caesar ended, the Roman Empire ended, the Holy Roman Church, the Pope picked up that title. So the Pope is Pontifex Maximus. And so allowing Roman Catholics into the New World, into the colonies, to them would be like allowing a foreign leader to take over the new colonies, because these people have total allegiance to this guy. So if we allow them to hold public office, do they hold allegiance to the people or they hold allegiance to the Pope? After fighting for independence, we ratified the Constitution, stipulated no religious test shall be required for offices. And in looking hindsight is 2020. Well, was that a great idea? I don't know. That's like a tough question, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, so before ratification in 1787, there was 2.5 million inhabitants. Only 25,000 people were Roman Catholics. This was a Protestant nation, baby. My Presbyterian grandfathers were here holding it down. My ancestor was here like 1740, something like that. Robert. Anyway, so by 1850, the U.S., with continued immigration, changed Roman Catholicism from the smallest denomination by 1850 to the largest denomination. And Lorenzo Ricci, who was superior, I just realized he has the same name as the guy that painted the Mercury thing. But Lorenzo Ricci, he was the superior general of the Jesuits from 1758 to 1775. And he wrote this 13 articles book. Basically, it was Sun Tzu's Art of Warburg. Now, Tupper Saucy, who wrote this Rulers of Empire, he puts out this theory that it was actually the Sun Tzu's Art of War book is made up. It was actually Lorenzo Ricci's book, and he published it under, like, they said they found this book and then they translated it, and it was all done by these Jesuit publishers. I couldn't understand where he was going with this point, but that was his idea. Whether that means anything, take it for with what it's worth. I don't know. He just mentioned that. So Ricci, though, he rewrote this 13 articles book, and it was basically him explaining how he's going to divide the British Empire against itself and the rest of Europe against Britain. So Sun Tzu, this book was translated in 1772 by a Jesuit priest. That's what he was saying. And used the tactics for that, which were to foreign to Europe to champion his cause, even sacrificing his own soldiers or priests to win the war. And his most effective move was mimicking the collapse of the Knights Templar 4 centuries earlier. Ooh, history strikes again. history repeats, or they just use the same moves. So he was most effective move was mimicking the, oh my God, I just read that. In 1773, Europe suppressed Jesuits from a papal brief, and this allowed the agents to go even deeper undercover. You think that would end them? No, no, no. This was all part of Lorenzo Ricci's plan. So Ricci, he's the superior general. He's the Black Pope. He has the chance with this new land of being literally the king of this land. He had connections with all of Europe because he's the top Jesuit. He's got Jesuits all in Europe and all of their territory. So he's got people in France, Mexico, colonies in England. And even though Britain was run by Catholic-loathing Freemasons, whose adepts obeyed an unknown superior, aka the Jesuit Black Pope, he ran it all. And at this time, it's important to remember, wars were fighting between Britain and France and Spain and whatever. All of Europe was fighting, but one group was universal. One group was in each country in positions of power, whether getting confessions from the elite king or running the schools. And one they promised all loyalty to one man. That was God on this planet, the superior general. That's power, right? That is freaking power. And Lorenzo Ricci had it. France was run by Louis XV, who obeyed the same superior through his Jesuit confessor, playing puppet master. Ricci told Louis to use his French soldiers and Indian allies to attack British trading posts on the Great Miami River, and they literally murdered every English-speaking trader. So obviously the French hate the British. British are building on their land. French king gets told by Lorenzo Ricci, why don't you kill all of them? They're getting too close to you. You don't want them there. Kill them. Just kill them. So they killed them all. They killed them all. And these lands are legally British. France were building forts on the Lake Erie, Ohio River. Virginia dispatched a small militia to confront the Catholic French trespassers. They send in the OG Freemason, George Washington. French ignored him. He was forced to retreat. So then the British, they're going to build their own fort to stand ground against the French at the fork of the Allegheny and Monongahela. Ask me how I know to say Monongahela. No. So in Pittsburgh, it's a river. Shout out to any 412s, Monongahela River. They joined there to make the Ohio River where Three River Stadium was in Pittsburgh, if any of you sports fan. So Virginia promises to send troops to help. So they start building this fort, and what happens to French and Indians? Again, massacre, carpenters, people just there to build a fort, and Washington retreated again. And this was the start of the French and Indian War, or Seven Years' War, aka Lorenzo Ricci's War, because he told them to start it. Pennsylvania colony of William Penn, PA, shout out, 215, William Penn and the Quakers. He was dead for a generation at this time, and his colony had devolved essentially into a British corporation, descendants known as the proprietors. Ah, see, with all great ideas, greed, corruption ruins it all. So Quakers, they abhorred violence, weapons. They got bumped out of power because of their aberration for these two things. So they ask another celebrated Freemason for help, Ben Franklin, printer of the Pennsylvania currency, and they say, please go talk to the king. We need help. The French keep slaughtering us. So he was also the Grand Master Mason of PA Freemasonry. So he arrives in London, and he says, and the king at this point is saying, let the Americans fight the Americans. We're not sending you any help. All part of Lorenzo Ricci's plan. Just wait. Just wait. Eventually, the king saw his point. He said, okay, take some soldiers. Then the French said some soldiers. Why is this helping Ricci? Well, let's just keep watching. So now you're getting British military presence in the colonies where they are not wanting British representation that much. And how are we paying for these soldiers that are defending America? With American taxes. What do we know about taxes? Once they start, baby, they don't stop. So that was the goal. Ricci knew if he could start getting taxes from America, making them pay taxes, he was going to be able to stir up, cause some beef. What's beef? Beef is when you need two gats to go to sleep. So he knew he could ferment this beef, though, by focusing on this issue of taxation without representation. Propaganda again. If we focus, just like the example of Ukraine, we focus so much on this, we forget all this stuff over here because they're saying, look at this, things that are much more pressing to an American family, gas prices, inflation, devaluing currency. We should be focusing on that because regular people out there can't afford to drive to work anymore. They can't afford to live because you effing Fs are so crooked and disgusting and But yeah, so that's what, so he knew if he could get the taxing going, he's going to be able to put in the papers with his Freemasons and whatever, like, is taxation without representation fair? Question mark. However, like the New York Times will write a shit article like that. Also point out, interesting to point out the similarities between Loyola's Gnosticism and Quaker beliefs. Quaker beliefs, Jesus would speak through the Quakers through inner illumination, a light that's available to all. Every person was a walking church. No need to attend steeple houses or pay taxes. No need to fight wars or distinguish between sex or social class. What's up, Jeremy? Shout out my boy, Jeremy Crow. But so the Quakers didn't believe that you needed to distinguish between sex or social class, just like Loyola's Gnostics. Oh, shit. What do we have today? They were persecuted in Europe and found refuge because the king owed William Penn's father a debt. Could you imagine that, though, being like, King, you know I did this for you. You owe me big. What are you going to give me? He says, damn it, take Pennsylvania. I marked it up for you. You got the whole land. Take it. It's yours. Crazy, right? But contemporary said William Penn was a Jesuit in disguise, which is fitting because all the Catholic clergy were in disguise thanks to law prohibiting Roman Catholics from wearing clerical garb. I'm sure that that law did exactly what they wanted them to do. They said, no more wearing your clerical garb. That'll stop them. That won't make them harder to identify. So basically, this law was written for the Jesuits. And you guys can understand that now. Hindsight's 20/20. Maybe at the time they thought that was a good idea. But it clearly wasn't. So now they were just able to work covertly. In 18th century, London was teeming with disguised Jesuit missioners working at schools, being your doctor, being your horse-drawn carriage driver, whatever, helping, working in the newspaper, helping change and manipulate public opinion. And last episode, I talk about Machiavelli and Cardinal Wolsey. If you guys didn't listen, they were these two guys that were with the Pope. The Bible's being read. Pope's angry. They realize they can't just murder everybody that reads the Pope, reads the Bible. So what they need to do, Machiavelli and Wolsey, is they need to create other disinformation. So they called it learning against learning. And Wolsey, if you remember, if you don't, he created the University Christ Church at Oxford. So this guy who's big into misinformation created a university that still exists today. William Penn was educated at Christ Church, where Wolsey started the college. And in 1682, Penn wrote a pamphlet, and it caused an uproar in England, causing the persecution of Quakers and Catholics. And this is what incited this great migration of Quakers and Catholics to Pennsylvania. So William Penn, supposedly our guy, a guy that just wants to practice religion, he writes something that's knowingly going to cause persecution, turmoil, and chaos to his followers, his fellow Quakers. But he writes it anyway. Forcing their hand, they could either be lynch mobbed or travel to this new land to populate it. And you think he had maybe some hidden motives with that pamphlet he wrote? And this reminds me of other forced migrations. The history that everybody knows, World War II. One theory is that they got the State of Israel after World War I and the Balfour Declaration, but no one was going. Because especially in Germany, the Jewish people of Germany, they had equal rights as a citizen. They were considered citizens. In some countries, that was a little different. France wasn't as good. But Germany, they, it was wide open. They had full rights or whatever. So no one was going to Israel. So how do you get people to go to Israel? Well, you create Europe and create chaos. You push up a leader who's going to force their hand to either leave or be killed. So this is, again, history repeats itself. Ben Franklin or William Penn did this exact same kind of move. So Penn, Franklin, and after him, his best friend, Voltaire, Freemason, founder of the Enlightenment. You see all these powerful men of history. Do they teach the Bible? Or did they teach you the antithesis of the Bible's teaching? Penn, being this great, like, oh, I'm going to go get free. He was boys with King James II. And his dying will or testament, William Penn signed back Pennsylvania to King James. So his people followed him from being persecuted to Pennsylvania. He signed the back under the Church of England, essentially. So why would someone do this if they were not a double, if they were a good person that cared about their people? They wouldn't. They would never do that. They wouldn't sell their people up the river. This meant by doing this, by giving it back to the Church of England, this forced the Quakers had to align themselves with their enemy. Now, who is the Church of England's enemy? The Church of Rome, the Catholics, to keep out of the Church of England's reach. So they are now alliancing with the Jesuit Roman Catholic Church that's in America. Brilliant, right? And this alliance was facilitated by Ben Franklin to make the enemy not the Black Pope, but the Church of England. Oh, no. The Jesuits, they're being kicked out of Europe because the Church of England, guys, they're our ally. Yeah, we don't believe the same thing, but we would leave each other alone. Let's team up. In 1759, the Jesuits, perfect timing for this, right, for William Penn's death and everything like that and signing it back to the Church of England, the Jesuits got expelled from Portugal by royal decree and removing their colonies. More than 1,000 fathers were crammed into these ships, dumped into the shores of the Papal States. I mean, all these Jesuit priests, it was similar to like the Templar kickout. They put in dungeons, seized all assets, churches, colleges. This was huge. So this French Jesuit, he took out this huge loan. Being so powerful, he didn't pay it back to the French king. So what did he do? He asked Lorenzo Ricci, the superior general who has unlimited funds. He says, please help me. They are coming after me. I did a bad business deal. Please, can you help? I am your faithful disciple. Could you help me out, Lorenzo? He says, no, I'm not going to help you out. I want you to get in trouble. And so that he did. And so he gets taken to court, and the Jesuit priest, probably not Ritchie's plan here, he brings out the Jesuit constitution to show that he can't be held liable for all this money he took out as a loan. And this is literally how all of the Jesuit constitution came into play from this court case. It was never revealed prior. This is how we know they hold a bloodied knife, your blood to your heart, while with three people holding a black crucifix and while saying to annihilate all impious leaders in Latin. That's how we know all this stuff. That's how we know that they promised they would rip their heart out and blah, blah, blah. If they, you know, and how they are listening to the superior general as if he is God on earth. Terrifying, right? When people are that motivated and that's a cult. That's a CIA cult before the CIA. And Voltaire, another great, you know, whatever. He slammed the Jesuits in plays for blasphemy, heresy, murder, usury, sorcery, everything. So that's good, right? He's making it known. Well, the same way that it's a good thing when Will Rogers lampooned New Deal politicians, he was like a comedian, or the same way that it was good that Trump continually got hammered in the press. All press is good press. It's a trick. Like in the Trump example, him getting lambasted creates a dichotomy. So now we're fighting with somebody else. It's the classic thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So you have thesis, antithesis, You have people control the same group controlling both sides. You smash them together, and the result, the synthesis, will be where you want it to go. So Voltaire's doing this, like it's like slamming how the press slammed the Jesuit or slammed Trump. People that now say, "Well, wait a second, I don't like Voltaire. I don't trust this paper. Maybe he's wrong. Maybe he's lying. He just doesn't like them." See, it's all a trick, dude. They play on us because we are trusting and honest people. Ugh, you know, it's just sad. It's just sad. Let me see where we're at here. We're getting there. Okay, great. And Louis was a Jesuit confessor and supporter. So why would he sign this deal to kick them out, right? The French King Louis, he loved the Jesuits. He confessed the Jesuits, blah, blah, blah. Some say he was in debt and he needed Parliament support who did not like the Jesuits. Tupper, the guy who wrote this book, says Ritchie asked Louis to sign the deal and kick him out. Why? And again, it's the same tactic. It allowed the once easily identified Jesuit priest to disappear into the public or other clergy. You don't know who's who. Charles III of Spain followed suit. No hard evidence against the Jesuit, but rumors, he kicks them all out. They also fostered rumors that Charles was a bastard king. This creates chaos. This creates turmoil. This creates questioning why we're following this man in this Enlightenment era when constitutional republics are starting to pick up. And Charles of Spain, he did the exact Templar surprise move. In 1760, he gave letters that could only be opened on sunrise at risk of death. Sunrise happens. They open. They arrest all Jesuits at once, put them on ships. If a single one is left behind, you'd be killed. 6,000 were rounded up in Spain. Ships were denied permission, and they were sending them to the Pope. The Pope and Ritchie denied accepting them. 6,000 of their priests, they said, no, we don't want them. Why? They were killed because of that decision. And when we return to this point that like art of war, the Sun Tzu thing, Ritchie was trying to make the Jesuits seem weak and harmless and the perfect compatriot of the Protestants in New England. That's why William Penn, a Jesuit himself, signed Pennsylvania back to the Church of England so they would align themselves with Ritchie's Jesuit priests. We're wayward too. Oh, everyone hates us just like you. Let's pal up in this, wow, beautiful new land you have here. Could we stay with you, please? We're being hunted just like you. It was a brilliant plan. Jesuits in Europe were quote unquote done for, but in America, they were left undisturbed. Undisturbed. And this funny story, Queen of Austria, she had two daughters. She wanted to marry them off to Bourbon princes. Caroline, she would marry the Spanish king, and Marie Antoinette, who is the son of Louis XV. So she expelled the Jesuits and her daughters married the princes. And of course, Marie Antoinette would lose her head in 1793 via guillotine. Guillotine, where did that get its name from? Guillotine gets its name from a French revolutionist who suggested its use in the death penalty, Dr. Joseph Guillotin, who was a French Jesuit priest. Mic drop. And just to bring up about this, because you guys know I'm kind of like a monarchist. One, a Jesuit, a super, supposedly the best of the best religious order, created and suggested this torture device or killing device to use on people. You know, that's not frowned upon in the Bible, I'm sure. And also, we say this joke of murdering Marie Antoinette because of this bread thing in her shoes. Does that make sense to you guys? Does that make sense that the people revolted because of her fancy shoes? No. They revolted because the Freemasons and the Jesuits created this air. They created propaganda. They said, you're not really free. Look over in America. They got their freedom. Don't you guys want that? You don't want a king and a queen. You're not free. You're not free. You'll be free if you have a constitutional republic where our leaders are elected democratically. Yeah, then that's utopia. You guys won't even know what to do. You'll have so much goddamn freedom. That's another show, though. It's another show. Pope Clement died during this turmoil of his Jesuits. And he was so crooked. He was with the Medici family line. I think I talked about that last episode. So his next successor, do you think it was just a pull out of the hat? No. But in this successor had to determine, was he going to help the Jesuits or be against them? And the choice was Lorenzo Gaganelli, which of course was a win for Ricci. He was an author of a book, Diatriba Technologica. I don't know what word. Diatriba Technologica in 1743. Who did he write that book for? He dedicated for Ignatius of Loyola. Oh, so weird that that happened, that he became the Pope then. And then he also helped this Lorenzo Gaganelli to become the Pope because Ricci literally sponsored his nomination for Cardinal. Regardless, I'm sure he just thought he would be in a wonderful Pope. Clement helped bring the prestige of the papacy to the lowest levels in centuries. He tried to make peace with all the royalty of Europe, feigning helplessness, even it meant bringing down the whole thing. And why? Because again, Sun Tzu's art of war, appear weak so your enemy will not count you as an enemy. And that's what they do. They all appeared weak to only use that power against them. Let's see. We'll do one more chapter. If you guys are enjoying, I got 10 people here. Honored 10 of you guys are here. Shout out. I'm wearing a hat tonight because I'm trying to grow my hair where I can like slick it back for my wedding in July. And it's not looking right. My sides are just they keep growing because I used to, you know, flip it over to the side and now it needs to grow this part because they used to cut it really short. So now when I try to do that in my hair, it looks goddamn hard. I'm unhappy. I'm unhappy with it. I think I'm going to go get a haircut and say, fuck it with this hair. Liv Allen wants me to grow this nice flowy hair in the back. And you know, I should grow my hair. I'm 31. God knows how long I'll still have it. I am blessed that I still have it, honestly. But okay, let's get back to the show. I just wanted to tell you while I was wearing a hat. Okay, here we go. Dun, dun, dun. The attackers of the Jesuits, like Voltaire and others, were all Freemasons and high-ranking government officials. Oh my God. It was like the fulfillment of Cardinal Wolsey's dream of learning against learning, using secular learning against scriptural learning of the Enlightenment. The Enlightenment literally brought down civilization. I'm sorry, it did. It ruined it. I would be much happier not questioning if dinosaurs ever existed I would rather go back to the Middle Ages and work my farm with my wife and have a huge family tree, all these children, be close to God, be close to them. We already talked about this before, but we literally work more hours now than the peasants did of the Middle Ages. Granted, could they die from infection? Yeah, they could. They could. Okay, so there were some positives, but so now people live to 90 that weigh 500 pounds that use their time, extra time for nothing but watching Netflix. Is it really better? Is it really better? So this new age was called for reason above any church, even the Bible. So the new age of enlightenment, new age worship, just like we have today, it was reason and experts and logic. Okay, so this new age issued a new religion, the neo-Gnostic religion of deism, the thinking man's alternative to religion. What were all our founding fathers? Oh, that's right. They were deist. They were Gnostic, Freemasonic deist. Because that's just like they do now. It's the same tactic, right? Neil deGrasse Tyson makes fun of Christians or any quote-unquote expert. They mock you. They mock us. They say we're stupid. Oh, fairy tale in the sky. Dude, you're doing the same thing they did during the Enlightenment. They did this. They mocked people. They said, oh, if you're thinking, all the elite people of this time, they weren't Christians. They worshiped whatever this Gnostic religion. They worshiped Baal. They worshiped Satan. And they mocked the Christians. Now, the neo-Gnostic religion of our time is Scientism. Deism was the most popular in the rooms of Freemasonry. Encyclopedias, this is crazy, were coming out of, and one of the biggest brands was funded by the King of Prussia, Frederick the Great. Was he a Christian man? No, he He was a deist. So you think he's making these encyclopedias to help you learn? He just wants you to know more about the world, guys. All these exciting inventions and exciting findings. No, he was doing that to, again, pull you away from God. All of the Bourbon kings who we talked about were Freemasons or affiliated with them. In 1728, the papacy banned Freemasonry and secret societies. Again, more trickery. Banning it just creates attention. I'm working. Gravy Show, God bless, my friend. Thanks for stopping by. Have fun at work. Pressy says Red Dead vibes. Red Dead Redemption? Is that what you're talking about? The video game? Yeah. So this king creates encyclopedias. And the Bourbon So the papacy and said they banned Freemasonry. Well, that's weird because the Bourbon monarchs, who were all Roman Catholic, were never penalized for having Freemason advisors on their staff. So are you really banning Freemasonry, or is it just a ploy to make people think you're against secret societies? Because you have a secret society pope working under you called the Jesuits that take a secret oath and have secret meetings and all these things like that. Little hypocritical as a man of God, if I might say so myself. And if you examine Freemasonry closely, it has the Jesuit watermark. The G on their rings, the Black Pope resides at Jesu, which is its HQ in Rome. Freemasonry was an intelligent way for the Roman Catholics to combat Protestantism, kings heading their own national churches, explosion of international trade. Freemasonry was just a secret way to monitor these different splinter groups that were breaking away from the normal ways they there was no kings in America. There was no king confessing to a Jesuit priest. So you push the secret society over there. They talk to each other. They mingle. You put a few spies in their group. They would never know. And that's how you get your information. That's how you manipulate. You get positions of power, blah, blah, blah. I don't need to explain how secret societies work to you. You guys get it. And it's exact recycle of the old Knights Templar infrastructure, all religions, all secret societies, all under the watchful eye of the Black Pope. Both Jesuit and Freemasonries, they're both humanist religious orders, secretive fraternities, socially conscious, politically active, for the greatest good, for the greatest number. No tradition, hold tradition, reason and experience in greater esteem than the Bible. Employ structures, programs of Gnostic visualizations to achieve knowledge of the divine. The end justify the means. The Illuminati quote requires obedience secured by a blood oath, hierarchy of superiors. Blood oaths, the Jesuits did it, Freemasons do it. Never a good thing. If someone's asking you for a blood oath, my friends, don't do it. It's not fun, I imagine. It's probably not good. It's not going to help you. This is a good spot to end here. We'll wrap this up here. So the first Freemason of North America was Daniel Cox. He was the son of a big-time doctor to the Queen of England. Charles and the Queen were both Catholics. So Cox was one of the first to write a dissertation of why all the crowns all the colonies should be united to establish a governor to govern each state, which would be subordinate to like a president. And Americans who know some history, they like it simple, right? Good guy, bad guy, treason, patriot, wrong versus right, big evil attacker versus the underdog. And much of our history who had access to these primary sources was this guy, Charles Thompson. Thompson inscribed every minute of every congressional session from 1774 to 1789. That was ratification. He helped design the Great Seal of the USA with William Barton, Freemason. Once ratified, he went home to Bryn Mawr. This is so important. Philadelphia area, right down the road. He destroyed all of his personal papers relating to these 15 years that he took the minutes for all these congressional meetings. He burns them, or he gets rid of them. Anything relating to the New Republic, he gets rid of them. And again, this guy's name is William Thompson. He wrote a lengthy history of the Revolution because he was there. He was at all these meetings. He had amazing primary documents, firsthand knowledge. He destroyed them all, destroyed the book he wrote. Some speculate that these documents weren't actually destroyed, but reside in the PA Masonic libraries because he was a Freemason. But so he either destroyed or hid 15 years of minutes and meetings and primary and firsthand accounts of stuff. Why? Why would somebody for 15 years who created the ultimate freedom, the ultimate country, the democracy of the Enlightenment, the apex world government form, why would you destroy everything? Why? Unless there was a reason why. And Charles, did I say William? I think his name was Charles. Anyway, so one time this one guy asked him to recount the great events of the revolution. And Thompson said, "No, I ought not, for I should contradict all the histories of great events of the revolutions and shew by my account of men, motives, and measures that we are not wholly indebted to the agency of Providence for its successful issues. I shall not indecisive future generations." They talked funny back then. What does this mean? What does this mean? He says he doesn't want to contradict the histories of the great events of the revolution. Well, why would he contradict them? Unless what happened was different than what he said, than what the history is. Why would he contradict? Who is wholly indebted to the agency of Providence for its successful issues? Providence in those times meant Christ. But he said the agency of Providence, wholly indebted to the agency of Providence. Agency is synonymous with a vicar. And what we learned earlier, what is the Black Pope called? The indebted to the vicar of Christ, God, aka the Black Pope. And this Thompson guy, he was a truth teller. Like, he wasn't a liar. People would chant, like, run out to him when they saw him in the street. Like, he's going to tell us what's happening. He knows everything, blah, blah, blah. And that's what he would do. The community would run outside to hear. So Thomas destroyed 15 years of minutes, 15 years of documents, and refused to ever talk about the revolution again because he couldn't lie anymore. He had the truth, and he couldn't break it. He knew it would change the whole landscape of this country if the truth came out that it wasn't a people's revolution. It was contrived, manipulated, and created. And that's it, guys. That's where we're going to end, because I'm tired. You're tired. It's 10:08. It's late for me. I got awesome show with Colorado Dank tomorrow. That's going to be so great. We're talking like new agey energy, peace, love, and stuff. We're talking the celebrities and dark spells and the occult. It's going to be an awesome episode. I can't wait. And then Friday, if you guys were here for the whole show, Matt from the Great Deception podcast is going to be joining us. Matt's an awesome dude. We talk all the time and I'm so excited. He's been doing such good work. So go check him out. I respect the hell out of people that create their own content. If you just have people on your show, zero respect, because what are you doing to learn and help teach people? But just by using other people's work. So I respect the hell out of Matt. Can't wait to have him on. We got an exciting week. And next episode with this, we're going to finish out with what the Jesuits did to create this America, how they tricked all of us. But yeah, so I'm Jack Allen from Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. Support the show if you can. Leave a review. Such nice reviews. And if you do support the show and you want a shout out, just tell me, dude. But at Kojak Podcast, that's my Twitter and Instagram. You can follow me both there. Trying to think of anything else exciting. I'm going to get back into making funny shirts, but I'm trying to juggle too many balls here, but I'm going to do that. And this is my new computer. So I hope you guys heard me and can see me clearly, see my pretty face. And I guess that's it, guys. So I'm honored that you are here. Thanks, Pressy. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, all of you, for coming in. The Jesuits were behind a lot of things. And again, this book we're reading is Rulers of Evil, and we're going to finish the book next week. And then we got even crazier topics that feminism, demonic. Oh boy, it's getting crazy. So hang in there. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. I'm Jack Allen. My friends, I love you all. God bless. Have a good night. Read a book. All right. Peace, everybody.